This is Kate Swanell for the MJA, and today we're talking with Dr. Michael Crampton, who's just been named the College of GPs GP of the Year at their annual conference. Welcome, Dr. Crampton, and congratulations.
Thank you, Kate.
Tell me a bit about the award and when you got to know about it and what it means to you.
Knowing people who've had the award in the last few years, I feel very honoured to join them now. I had no idea that I'd been nominated. I had no idea the process was going on. It was a complete and absolute shock. And my immediate two responses were disbelief, complete sort of, oh my gosh, surprise. And the second thing was along the lines of now, oh my gosh, what's this going to lead to? There's going to be all kinds of things like these media interviews that I'm sure will follow.
So you just get to bask in the glory and take a long holiday, no?
The long holiday part, no. The glory, I had my first day back in practice yesterday, and it was an interesting day back in practice because as much as I wanted to keep it quiet, the practice had put up some little signs. As everybody coming in wanted to understand what it all meant, they said, congratulations, I'm sure you deserve it, but what does it all mean? I just spent my time explaining it.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you study and when did you graduate?
I've been a GP now for 30 years. I studied at UNSW. My hospital was St. Vincent's Hospital. I graduated in February 1981. I know that only too well because my daughter was born on the same day that I got my degree. I started working and did so for 4 years at Westmead Hospital. And then I've been in general practice primarily in Western Sydney since that time.
So general practice was always the way you were going to go?
I don't know that many people have got a clear idea until they've actually got into the hospital system. Mm. It was certainly my leaning, and as I spent my time in the hospital and understood what I'm going to unkindly call the partialist nature of specialty versus the generalist nature of general practice, I certainly liked the idea of continuing whole person care over time, and I was therefore attracted to general practice.
You've had some pretty diverse interests along the way, notably your early interest in e-health. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into that side of practice and your involvement in regulation and guidelines in that area?
During my university time in the late 70s, it started to become apparent to myself and many, many others that there was a role for computers in our knowledge management and in our patient records management over time. During my later time at Westmead Hospital, I was fortunate enough to meet up with Dr. Graham Miller, who was well known to many people through the Beach program. He was at Westmead at that time. And he introduced me to a number of people working in the College of General Practitioners in the area of health records. Fell into a situation where we started talking about standards for computerized health records. In other words, trying to take the principles from the manual health record and write down what we'd be expecting of a computerised health record. That led me into work with the RACGP's computer conferences, which had started in the very early 1980s and were run about every 2 years. And they were educational and display conferences to show GPs what could be done with computers. So I had a lot of involved in participating and then organising those conferences throughout the 80s and 90s. As part of that, I was invited to become the inaugural RACGP Computer Fellow, in other words, the person to make noise about computers and to help. That took me to Monash University in 1987, and I worked down in Melbourne for 3 years part-time. The Computer Fellow role was a two-pronged role. There was an educational component of it, which we expressed mainly through the computer conferences, and there was a development role through it, which we expressed mainly for looking at issues that might be slowing down the uptake of clinical computerisation. And the first issue that we came across was the simple legislative restriction. Back in the 80s, the legislation said if you want a prescription to be legal, it has to be handwritten. And clearly that was at odds with trying to run them through a computer system.
Exactly.
So we actually, on behalf of the RACGP, a number of us visited each of the state health departments and had individual negotiations with the state health departments to get legislation change, regulation change, which allowed for printed prescriptions being legal prescriptions. So that's examples of the kinds of things that that the college was able to become engaged with over the late 80s and early 90s to start laying the scene for the uptake of clinical computerisation.
Are you pleased or not with where general practice is in terms of electronic patient records at this stage? Did you think it would take so long for them to become more standard across the board?
I'm now convinced that major changes like that are generational changes rather than something which is going to happen in a short period of time, because there's so many drivers and reasons why people do and don't make changes to how they do their operate their practices. So the whole notion of changing to computerization of all of the aspects in the consulting room really required a whole lot of hardware, technical, software, legislative, operational changes, and just slow introduction over periods of time. And one of the more significant components of that really was the notion of there being, I'm going to say, stimulus or incentivization towards it, because to introduce hardware, software, and so in the consulting room was going to cost significant amounts of money. For many people, it was a barrier to invest those kinds of funds, and such programs as the Better Practice Program and then the Practice Incentives Program rolled through. That helped to offset the costs that practitioners would face to do that. So to answer your original question about surprise, no, I'm not really surprised, but pleased, yes, I am, because we've fantastic capacity now with our computerized systems. As a medical educationalist for the registrars, I get to see the array of implementations, and so some doctors, unfortunately, are still really using their computer systems as a very simplistic typewriter, where others doctors are using their very involved clinical databases incredibly intelligently and using them to review both what's happening within the individual patients and also what's happening across the practice. So the capacity and the promise with the computerized systems is really there, but the use of them is not as, the use of all of those capacities is not quite as widespread yet as you'd like it to be. But I think the system continues to change, and I'm sure we're going to see over the next 5 and 10 years more demands made on us to know about what we are actually managing among our patients, which of our patients is up to scratch with guidelines and recommendations, those kinds of issues. If you look at data collection, though, it's interesting because GPs, I would maintain, are primarily interested in the patients that they serve. So if you say to GPs, the main reason I want you to focus on your computerization is to serve the national data collection purpose, I suspect you'll not find too many will say that's my main driver. However, if you demonstrate to GPs that by properly utilizing all the capacities that are within the clinical computerization software, they can better manage their individual patients and they can better manage their collection of patients in their practice, I think that's the thing which captures many GPs. Once you demonstrate how you can use the tools we've got to prove that method, I think they become very interested. And as a consequence of doing that, then we can roll out de-identified data that can support these national collections.
Now, you're the clinical director at Went West in Sydney. Tell us a little bit about integrated care, because Went West is very much an integrated care system, isn't it?
So Went West is a company. It is the only company in the country that holds both a GP regional training provider contract and also a Medicare local contract. In other words, at Went West, as far as general practice is concerned, we actually cover the spectrum from training the young doctors who wish to be GPs right through to supporting the established practices that we have across our Western Sydney region. Now, it becomes pretty logical, especially when you consider that our geography of Western Sydney, Medicare Local and Went West, our geography is exactly the same as the Western Sydney Local Health District. So a very good working relationship with the LHD in this area. And we've got some agreed strategic priority areas that we work with, including such things as chronic disease management, Aboriginal health, child health. So very sensible and broad areas, but we've got some agreed strategic priorities. Now, when you look at the fact that the basic funding for scenario supporting general practice comes from a Commonwealth source, and the basic funding scenario supporting hospital practice comes from the state government source, then you can see the potential for a lot of difficulties in effectively sharing and integrating the management of patients. It's very easy to say for a particular patient, not my problem, and pass them over to the hospital side and for the hospital to do the same with general practice. And the patients are the ones who suffer in that. Integrated care is part of a movement that's pretty much recognised around the world, which is to try to take a patient focus in the management of these patients and actually find ways to help them navigate the system rather than turn them out into the system to try to navigate by themselves. Our systems are complex, our health systems are complex, and it's hard for patients to navigate them. Wentworth is certainly involved with the Western Sydney Local Health District, and we are one of three LHDs in New South Wales that have been funded into a demonstrative integrated care project over the next 3 to 4 years. So what we are trying to do here is to assist an identified cohort of patients with chronic disease to be managed properly and fully in general practice, to navigate across the community and the hospital health system when they need services, and to provide extra services for these people in the hospital setting. I can go into more details of the model if you like, but I mean that's effectively what the integrated care is.
Is this a model that you're hopeful will spread nationally?
The notion of a demonstrator project is to test out certain ideas, and the three demonstrators in New South Wales are testing out different versions of the same kind of concept.
Right.
I think if you have a look at the international patient-centred medical home model, which has associated with it a patient-centred medical neighbourhood model, and in other words, the idea of the patients at the centre and the healthcare providers are trying to help navigate the patients around the health system in that model, then that's the same general philosophy as what we're talking about here within the integrated care movement. So, yes, from that perspective, I think the principles of what we're talking about here within our demonstrator project, I would expect that we'll see over time that they will spread more nationally and internationally, not because we've come up with them, but because we are testing the same principles that many other people are testing. The bottom line behind those is that we're working off the triple aim, the notion of trying to improve the patient journey, to reduce the cost of healthcare overall, and to be more cost-effective in the whole system.
You mentioned earlier that the Wentworth and the local health district's boundaries are pretty much exactly the same. Is that important in terms of the success of the model?
Yes. I think the short answer to that is yes. and the reason that is that we can work with the same population, if you like. That's at the simplest level. I just because a Medicare local has a certain boundary does not mean that all of the patients managed by all of the doctors within that boundary all come from that area. So it's not quite as simple as that. However, administratively, it makes for superb relationships between the primary care organisation and the hospital.
Now, I know you've done a lot of work during your career with safety and effectiveness of vaccines. Tell us a little bit about your work with the TGA and the Advisory Committee on Safety of Vaccines.
Well, in 2014, the TGA established the Advisory Committee on the Safety of Vaccines, ACSOL. That was set up as the result of recommendations that came from the Horvath inquiry that arose following the CSL brand Fluvax under 5-year-old fever problems that occurred about 4 or 5 years ago. It was recognised as a result of Horvath reviewing what occurred back at that time that we needed to have some more specific focus on vaccine safety. I have been working representing the RACGP on two previous committees related to immunisation. The first is the Australian Childhood Immunisation Registers Management Committee. I was on that for some years until it was disbanded and merged into the National Immunisation Committee. I then joined the National Immunisation Committee, which is the committee that's primarily charged with overseeing the delivery of the National Immunisation Program. I've had, therefore, some involvement in the developments that have been going on in immunisation over time, and I was therefore invited to participate in the implementation committee following the Horvath review. Arising from that, one of the recommendations was AXOL, and I've managed to find myself on AXOL now as a consequence of that. It's an interesting place to be. AXOL is meant to give expert advice, and believe me, there are some amazing experts sitting around the table at AXOL that I get to listen to and join. Meant to give expert advice about vaccine safety. So all of the issues that come up with vaccines that we're proposing to implement into the Australian environment. So I'm not surprised that less well-informed comment can get a Guernsey fairly similar to very well-informed comment. It could just run around the system, this sort of less well-informed comment. The only way that we can deal with that is to use the same systems to have very well-informed comment. And so there are some excellent pieces of advice that come out of the Commonwealth-funded organisations, the best one being the TARGET, the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation. I think the only way that we can actually manage those is to make sure that we are promoting excellent advice. And one of our strategies has been to make that advice into bite-sized chunks so that GPs can make use of that information in bite-sized chunks when they're having conversations with their patients about these things.
You obviously take on registrars and do quite a lot of medical education. How important is it to your everyday life?
Personally, yes, I do take on registrars. I've been a GP supervisor for over 15 years in our practice in Windsor, and there are multiple supervisors in the practice. I've also been a medical educator here at Lake West for about the last 9 years. So that's also GP training, but just a slightly different bend on the process. And so I certainly believe it's an incredibly important part of my career, and I think of most GPs, because we need to pass on to the next generations the important aspects of our craft of general practice. And our craft of general practice is more than knowledge. There's a whole series of skills which really need to be acquired with practice over time. That's what medical education is about. It's passing on all the knowledge and all of the skills. I'm of the belief that we are all teachers as GPs. We teach our patients all the time, and that there's a huge value in some of us becoming teachers of the next generation. And my greatest joy as far as medical education is concerned is watching the younger doctors that we have trained over time become the senior and experienced doctors and start setting up their own practices and then start training their own registrars and becoming the medical educators of the future. And that's certainly my experience. I'm old enough and grey enough now to have seen that cycle complete here at Wentworth over time. It's an incredibly joyous experience to see that.
Are you optimistic about the state of general practice in Australia and where it's going?
Yes. In short, there's always challenges. There'll be all kinds of challenges. Those challenges arise from perhaps some dilution of the kinds of skills that we have and the kinds of areas that we've been working. And those challenges come from funding issues, because general practice by its nature is private business, it's private small business. Yeah. So we have to keep that in our mind as we're operating. But I'm still of the opinion that most people, particularly as they get older in their health careers, want to have a close relationship with an individual GP who's effectively their health advisor. So it's because many people want that kind of health advisory relationship that they can get from a person rather than from a computer or a book, that I'm still positive for the future of general practice.
How much time do you get to spend actually practicing these days?
I'm working 2 very full days a week.
And it obviously gives you a lot of joy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And is it about that long-term relationship you have with your patients?
patients and their families.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that when you've worked in a place, and I've been in my current practice for 17 years, one of the things that you get to see is that you get to watch generations of families come through. I certainly have got a number of families where I'm treating or have treated four generations of the one family, and I'm blessed to be actually still have one family that I've been seeing all of my general practice career. They were patients in my first practice, and I'm seeing the third generation of that family, and still the first generation and second generation, but I'm seeing all three generations of that family still in my practice. And I think that highlights one of the messages which we pass on to registrars, which is that as time passes, you move from being a doctor who they come to see to being the doctor that they come to see, because they form that trusting relationship with you and they come to seek your advice about what to do about their healthcare. I encourage every GP to consider what they can contribute, because they have things to contribute. I know that for a fact. And I certainly encourage GPs to consider about participating in ongoing training for the future generation.
That sounds like a perfect place to stop. Michael, thank you for your time today, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much, Kate.